Ron and Anian.
Are you mentally prepared to repair that engine? Are you mentally prepared to put a battery in that hybrid vehicle? Are you mentally prepared to put a transmission in your car? Because you have to look at the other factors.
The Car Doctor.
Isn't this a great country? And look at this. I got to do my own singing competition in a way, and I win every week. I get to go out on national radio, and I get to talk to people about problems with their cars.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to get down with the Car Doctor. How are you today? Let's get over to Bob in Illinois and talk to him. Bob, what's going on?
How you doing, sir?
Good, sir. What's going on?
Hey, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, you had made mention of painting the underside of your car, and you named a brand name, and your comment was that it would stick to feathers.
Yeah, Benjamin Moore Low Luster. You're going to ask, and let me say it like this, because I just went out, Benjamin Moore Low Luster is their rust preventative. Now, I've since learned that there are several different lines of Benjamin Moore Low Luster paint. So it used to be that I could call the local paint store in town and say, hey, Bob, I need another 2 quarts of Low Luster or Benjamin Moore. And they knew what I was talking about because it's all I ever buy from them. Well, last week I got the new guy on the phone. And he said, which one? And I said, what do you mean, which one? The one I've been buying for the past 15 years, that one. And so evidently there's a number at the bottom of the can. I always purchase it in quarts, and it's a bluish-gray colored can every time. It still is. And I believe the part number starts with 028, and I think it's 02896 or 02855. If I remember right, there's 3 numbers across the bottom, but it's specifically rated to help protect against rust, which is why I use it. And, you know, it's easy prep. It takes a beating. It's easy to touch up. You know, one of the things I make sure, though, is if I'm doing an older car, are you doing an older car or a new car? What are you trying to do, Bub?
Well, it's a 2004 Dodge Ram, but it's really pretty clean under.
Right.
I don't know if the previous owner didn't drive it during the winter much or what. It's pretty clean. And I was going to ask you, how much prep work do you do, or how much do you have to do to clean it up?
When I did the plow truck, I purchased a 2019 Silverado about a year and a half ago. It's got a whopping 2,800 miles on it now because I drive it a lot. I took it from the dealership, took it to the shop, put it up in the air, took everything apart and painted it over the course of the next week. So there was literally no prep work there. There was, you know, take it with a rag, wipe it, maybe a little prep salt, clean everything off, we're done. When I did the Monte Carlo, everything was actually pretty clean on that car too. A 72 Monte Carlo, 41,000 miles, sitting in a barn in Texas for the better part of 12 years before I found that it was waiting for me. I cleaned off most of it, blew it off with an air gun. There really wasn't a lot of rust to de-rust, if I can say that word. I just blew it on with the gun and I was done. When I put it in a gun, I'll pour it straight and I cut it with about 5% lacquer thinner. All right, just to help the gun flow a little bit. Sometimes I'll run a little less, depends on, you know, what I'm trying to get for coverage. Now, when I did the Monte Carlo, minimal cleanup. If I was doing an older vehicle like that, obviously I don't want to. Obviously, I don't want to spray on top of grease and rust, or you know how grungy is it? You know, what do you have access to? Can you get up and around the bends and the twists? You know, the nice thing with Benjamin Moore is it really does stick to chicken feathers. So you can blow it into a corner if you've got some crud up there that you can't get to, and whatever's there is going to stay there. It's not going to go anywhere, I can tell you that. There are pockets of the Monte Carlo where I can't get up inside the frame as good as I'd like to. And, you know, it's a Texas car, so it's got some Texas dust, and it's encapsulated in paint. It's not going anywhere. It'll be with the car until I'm long gone. So it sticks well. It works well. You know, I like it better than the poor 15s of the world. than anything else I've ever seen out there because the prep work is minimal. And that's, you know, when I say it'll stick to chicken feathers, it also sticks to your hands quite well too. So make sure you wear gloves. You know, you'll be walking around with splotches on your hands for a long time to come. You know, and that's been my experience. Now, this is the Monte Carlo's 1, 2, 3. I've probably done in the last 3 years. I've probably done 7 or 8 cars in the last. I did the hot rod with it. Now the hot rod I did. I took the chassis down to nothing, had the frame blasted, and just, you know, sprayed right over, you know, minor prep with some prep sol, just cleaned it up. Just common sense cleanup. And the hot rod, 9 years later, the frame still looks like the day I shot it. And, you know, there's no chips in it. There's no road rash on it. There's no rust on it, although it's not a fair statement. The hot rod's never out. The reason I'm using Benjamin Moore on the Monte Carlo is because I want to drive that car every day. That's my goal. I want that to be the ice cream car. When Susie says, "Hey, let's go out for ice cream," I'm going to toss her the keys and say, "Here, you go. I'll stay home," and she can take it out in the rain or snow, and who cares? You know, that's important to me.
And this is a daily driver. Right. I mean, I don't plan on keeping it for another 20 years or anything. But
right,
and I haven't priced. I was thinking about getting a price for undercoating, but I would imagine that's pretty expensive compared to doing it this way.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the Benjamin Moore is like $25-$30 a can. I think it was $27 a can this week, last week. And the nice thing is I like doing it myself, not just because I like doing it, but because I know, you know, I'm not going to be overzealous with undercoat. One of the things I don't like with undercoat is, and I still see it to this day, undercoat done wrong will hold the moisture against the object and cause it to rust out faster. I've seen problems with undercoat over time. Unless you get everything solid coat, no way for the water to get up behind it. But those days are gone. Now, like I said too, the nice thing with Benjamin Moore is if you want to touch it up, you know, a year from now you look at it and somebody worked on it and they smacked something with a hammer and they actually chipped the paint off. You take a dollar paintbrush, you go into the car, you go boop boop boop, you're done. there's minimal touch up, and it's a minimal amount of effort. So, if you can't find if you can't find it at your local hardware store, shoot me an email, ron@cardoctorshow.com, and I will take a picture of the can and send it back to you. And I should actually keep that because I can see I've gotten a lot of requests for this over the past week. So a lot of people are curious. So I'm more than glad to do that for you. And maybe what I'll do is, do you do Facebook, Bob?
I do, occasionally.
If you get out to Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor Facebook page, sometime tomorrow, I'll try and get a picture of the can up there between tomorrow and Monday, and I'll just put a little note on it for all to see, and maybe I'll do it that way. That's what I'll do, because a lot of people have been asking me about it, because I think to walk in, as I learned this week, if you get the new guy, he's going to go, "What low luster?" And then you'll be, "Well, the one Ron uses." And he'll be like, "Ron who?"
So, Ron who?
Yeah, exactly. All right.
Well, sir, you have proven once again that you truly are the car doctor.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate that. You stay safe, my man. All right?
Thank you.
You're very welcome. You take good care. There's nothing like, you know, when you paint the car. What did I paint this week? Oh, I had the tank down for the Monte Carlo. And you know, I painted the undercarriage or the floor pan underneath the trunk. I shot it up inside the seam. So trust me, this car is never going to rust. And then I painted the top of the tank and, you know, waited and put it back up. And now I'm thinking, how do I want to paint the sides of the tank? Because the neat thing about the Monte is it's such an original car. It still has the U.S. Steel stencil on the bottom of the gas tank. If you remember back in the day, U.S. Steel was making the gas tanks for GM, and this car still says U.S. Steel with the date code of the day it was stamped and put on the vehicle. So I've got to think, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to blow some paint along the sides of the tank, kind of feather it in for protection, and then there's a couple little rust spots just starting on the tank where the galvanized is broken down. I'm going to hit that with a little galvanized silver, just with a brush, just touch it. And then I'm going to clear coat the bottom of the tank. What can I say? It's a disease. So at least it'll still look original. But, I'll still get the protection of the Benjamin Moore. But that's the deal. 855-560-9900. Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor coming back right after this.
First gear, it's all right. Second gear, a lean fast. Third gear.
and Andy, the Car Doctor. We are back. You know, let's do a quick piece of email. I keep thinking, do I want to give it away this weekend? I've got the neatest little giveaway bag I've got from the folks over at PB Blaster, Blaster Corp. They sent me a bag. It's got it's a goodie bag with a PB Blaster hat, a T-shirt that talks about PB Blaster product, and a keychain and some other odds and ends. And maybe we'll give it away this weekend. Now, the T-shirt comes in any size you want, as long as it's extra large. I just want to state that right up front. So we'll leave it up to Tom. If we get an interesting call the rest of this hour, we'll give it away this week. If not, we'll give it away next week. So just something to say. Just give us a call. Talk to us about your car problem. And if you're nice to Tom, we'll see if he likes you. He'll give you the T-shirt and the goodie bag. So quick piece of email. Hey, Ron, I wanted your perspective. I own a 2012 Subaru Impreza with 143,000 miles on it. My commute's about 90 miles a day total. At my last major service, I was told to be prepared to replace wheel bearing struts and other parts that wear. I've been told that the Subaru boxer engines can easily run over 200,000 miles. Not sure about the lifespan of the CVT unit. I'm just wondering if I should start looking for a pre-certified used car or keep up with the maintenance and repair of my Impreza. Thanks, I'm a fan. Just from Joe, 516 area code. I guess that's New York. Huh. Well, you know, Joe, I've got to tell you, yeah, the engines will go over 200,000, provided you're ready to put a set of head gaskets in them, because the head gaskets still are the weak link in the Subi, so, but not the worst job in the world. I still think it's a matter of dollars and cents. You know, you've got to decide. It's yeah, you could probably put a set of head gaskets in it. There's, you know, $2,000. You know, and then depending upon what the other components are, it's wheel bearing struts and other parts that wear. So what are we talking about? You know, is it 2,000? So are we talking about putting $5,000 worth of struts and head gaskets in this car and wheel bearings? And then where are you? What is that pre-certified used car going to cost? Now, this is a 2012. All right. That's a little bit different. And the car that I'm thinking about is we have a customer that has a 98 Nissan Maxima that was in a sort of a similar situation. And Eddie's car needed, it's got an oil, bit of an oil leak starting to form out of the rear of the oil pan gasket area. And well, I'll tell you what, stay put. Let me get back to the phones. The phones are lit up and Tom's telling me to go. Let me, Tom must have some reaction here to the giveaway. And we'll get back to Joe and Eddie's Maxima in a second. Jason in Iowa, 11 Toyota Sienna. How can I help you today, sir?
Yes, I remember a while back you had a show and you talked about your daughter's Toyota and that sealed transmission and that fluid.
Yep.
That world
yep.
transmission.
Yeah, fluid. The WS fluid.
So, yep. So I got one that's pushing about 200,000 miles, a 2011 Santa van, and just out of the last oil change. And I just by chance say, okay, I had the my mechanic just check that fluid, because that's sealed transmission fluid. It looked pretty dark. And he's got, so their transmission service uses this BG products, this flush machine. And at this many miles, I don't know if I should just leave it at this point or do I trust my mechanic, go ahead and do that flush and use their product and do that. And then I guess they recommend that every 30,000 miles thereafter. My question is, being experienced with that.
I think it's a philosophy, Jason. You know, it's, do you go to the doctor once a year, get a physical?
I do now.
Okay. Do you want to know the bad news before you get it, or do you just want to wait and see if a part falls off?
No, we want the bad news.
Right, we want the bad news. So at 200,000 miles, now relate that to the car, all right? At 200,000 miles, do you want to know when the trans is going to fail, or do you want to wait for the part to fall off?
No, we want to get that fixed because
right.
we use that for trips and stuff.
Right,
so
right. And that's the issue. If you're counting on this to be reliable, and here's the ultimate question, all right? Like, I know you would reattach the arm if the trans failed on the Sienna. Would you? Is it economical for you to put a trans in this or replace the vehicle?
Well, those vehicles are still pushing, 10,000 plus,
right.
for cost. And on a Toyota Sienna, I probably wouldn't have any qualms about putting a used transmission in it.
Right.
From a junkyard, just because they usually don't have any troubles.
Right. Well, yeah, they'll go 500,000 miles. They will. And even if now you're in Iowa, so, I don't know, in Iowa dollars, what could a trans rebuild be out of the dealer? $4,000, $5,000?
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to find that. Well, I might find a Sienna with less miles, but, you know, it's somebody else's vehicle. It's not my vehicle. I've already known
right.
services history on it.
Right.
So, and I can't get another Sienna for four or five.
No, no.
It's going to have the same amount of money, miles on it.
So. It's four or five, but there's more zeros after it. There's a whole lot more zeros after it. So, you know, I say go for the fluid exchange. And, you know, if there's a reaction to it, you're going to know it probably within the first 5,000 miles. So if you're looking for the bad news, you're going to find out relatively soon. And if there isn't, hey, you did okay. And, you know, at this point, that's just my way of thinking. I like to do it rather than not do it. I want to know, I want to watch to see if the part's going to fall off. At least I know now, not when you decide to leave Iowa and drive to the Jersey Shore over the summer and take the, you know, the 22-hour ride with the family in the car. Hey, let's go to the shore. Oops. And, you know, you need a transmission somewhere around Pennsylvania. So, you know, at least this way, that WS fluid, has a finite life, as we found out. And, you know, the fact that you got the 200,000 to me is great. Don't push it. Bottom line. All right, sir?
All right. Sounds good.
So, good luck to you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I just, why would we want to take this further than we need to? And that's the concern. And the other thing to be aware of is, you know, if you're going to swap that, and this is for Jason and everybody else out there, if you're going to swap that, you know, it's a question of if you get a junkyard trans, as Jason pointed out, you don't know the history of it, number one. Number two, it's still a nine-year-old transmission. It's an 11 Sienna. It's not a 15 or a 16. So the majority of, or at least half of that repair is the labor getting the trans out of the vehicle. And if you're going to count on it for the duration, if you want it to last, if you want any kind of a reasonable warranty, a roll of the dice against a problem, you know, you get a reman unit, whether it's from the dealer, whether it's from your local trans builder, somebody that's got a nationwide warranty. You know, remember, you're buying security, you're buying safety, you're buying reliability. That's part of what a transmission overhaul is about. And as I was saying going back, right, talking about Joe and the Subaru and talking about Eddie, Eddie's Maxima needed, oh, look at this, the clock's going to take me. You know, we're going to talk about Joe and Eddie and the Subaru and the Maxima when the Car Doctor returns. So stay put, 855-560-9900. I can't seem to finish this story, but I will when I return right after this.
What's more fun than listening to Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor and getting that car fixed right? 855-560-9900. Give Ron a call. Now, back to Ron.
Hey, look at this. Joe from Long Island is on line one. Joe, you there? Joe?
Yes.
Yes, Joe. You know, I'm reading your letter on air. I don't know if you realize this or not.
Oh, all right.
It's the funniest thing. So let me pick up the story here. So Joe wrote in, and now he's on the phone. He wanted my perspective, 2012 Subaru Impreza. This is you, right, Joe?
Yes.
About 90 miles a day in last major service, you were told you need wheel bearing struts and other parts that wear, et cetera, et cetera.
Correct.
So, you know, as I was answering the story, I was telling the story of another car. A customer came in the shop this week, 98 Nissan Maxima, with about 190,000 miles on it.
All right.
It's got a little bit of an oil leak. Eddie's got some oil seeps out the rear main pan gasket, but to do that, the trans has to come down. The front exhaust pipe has to come down. So it slowly started to unfold into, it's got an oil leak in the back. It's got some oil seeps up front. We're going to slowly work our way into, if we don't do it this time, we're going to do it next time. It's going to become, the engine's got to get resealed. At 200,000 miles and 22 going on 23 years old, as I said to Ed, doesn't it make sense to rebuild the trans at this age? The labor involved in pulling the trans out, wouldn't you go through the unit?
Correct.
Yeah, makes sense, right?
Yes.
and we decided against it. And here's why. As we started to progress our way through, in his case, again, a 22, 23-year-old vehicle, we couldn't get an original torque converter out of Nissan. We couldn't get an original catalytic converter out of Nissan. We could get engine oil seals and gaskets, but some of the parts and some of the critical parts weren't easily sourced from good places.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, as I said to him, live with the oil seeps. They're not extreme. You know, keep a check on the oil level. I think this car will probably be around in a couple of years with the same amount of leakage. And if not, you're better off, because we totaled it up. And in his case, we were $12,000 to $15,000 to overhaul this car, to put this car back in shape. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in his case, didn't make a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
Now we'll talk about Joe. Joe's got a 2012 Subaru Impreza with 143,000 miles on it. So it's an eight-year-old car. Going, let's call it 100 miles a day.
Correct.
All right. So they're telling you wheel bearings and struts. Why?
The tech at the dealership claims to hear something.
Okay.
As far as the bearings, I don't know if he's using a stethoscope or by some other means, but personally, I don't hear anything when driving. But they told me at this mileage, it's something that does wear, and he claims to have heard something. They told me that the rear struts are leaking, and it would be good to replace all four. There's a crack somewhere in the exhaust system, I believe, toward the end of the muffler pipe. I mean, it does add up to quite a bit.
It's $5,000.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. Listen, if we're talking two wheel bearings or four wheel bearings?
Right now, it's the two rear.
Okay. So there's two rear bearings. They're $250, $300 in parts alone each.
Yeah. They priced the job at around $800,
right,
I believe.
Right. And then two rear struts. By the time you do that, and then how much of the exhaust are they going to get into? It'll be for...
I'm not sure.
Right.
They just told me there was a crack somewhere, I believe, in the muffler area. I'm not exactly sure. I don't know what that entails.
What they typically do, Joe, is they rust the flanges. The Subaru exhaust systems themselves are pretty solid.
Yes.
But they'll rust the flanges. The flanges aren't made out of stainless. The rest of the system is. It's the dumbest thing. So the exhaust doesn't rot, but the flanges that hold it together fall apart. Toyota does the same thing.
Okay.
I see it quite a bit. So, you know, you start pricing out, and you've got to look at the whole thing now. And that's why I say $5,000, because look at the mufflers. Look at the front cat. If the back half of the system is like that, what's the front half look like?
Okay.
You know, whenever you got something 8 years old, 150,000 miles on it,
right,
we've got to start to, you know, it's not easy, but we got to fire up the crystal ball. We got to say, where are we going?
Right.
All right.
That's why I started throwing ideas around, and I said, you're always a trusted opinion, and that's why I kind of threw it your way to get your feedback.
I appreciate that. You know, if let's say it's $5,000, Joe.
Yes.
All right. So it's $5,000 that we'd have to spend anyway. You've gotten use out of the car. You're into it for five now to bring it back to level for today.
Right.
All right. What's that certified pre-owned car going to cost you? Because you need a commuter vehicle.
Right.
All right. And on the pretense,
a reliable one.
Yeah, a reliable one on the pretense that we're ever going to get to get out of the house again.
Correct.
So.
Oh yeah. So a.
Yeah. Got to be 20.
Oh, easily. Yes.
All right, it's got to be 20.
Easily.
But you know, you've owned this car since new?
Yes, I'm the original owner.
Okay.
Yes.
Car has some value.
It's been very reliable, I have
right.
to say.
You know, but this car has value.
Okay.
So let's be conservative. You think this car is worth $3,000? Probably more.
Probably more, I would say.
Probably double that. I bet you this car is worth $6,000-$7,000 on the open market.
All right.
So let's play with the numbers. There's $7,000. Plus the five,
mm-hmm.
that's 12 when I went to school, which was a
mm-hmm.
million years ago. So you're halfway to that certified pre-owned car.
Right.
Now you're going to spend 12, put another 12 on top of that 12, that's 24.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you 24 buys a nice pre-owned car.
Yes.
And you're not putting money in it. You know, it'll have...
Most of them come with warranties.
It'll come with some warranties.
Right.
I'm thinking you're going to find, you know, it's going to be 3-4 years old with 40, 50,000 miles on it.
Right.
Certified pre-owned. If Joe can afford it, I think it makes more sense.
Uh-huh.
Okay, because here's the rub. You know this is, I bet you looking at this car, and I'm not saying this your current car needs the $5,000, but I bet you look at this, because I question the strut thing. Everybody likes to sell struts.
Okay.
Okay, so I'll go along. I'll play the game. So it's struts. It's struts and two back wheel bearings. The snake in the woodpile on a Subi of this age,
yes,
has to be, we've got to wonder about head gaskets.
Uh-huh.
All right, that's $2,000 on a good day without any trouble.
Okay.
And the transes themselves, this is an automatic CVT.
That was a concern of mine.
You know, they're $7,000.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't know. I when you go on certain talk forums on the internet, Subaru forums, they praise the engines going to maybe 250K, but no one talks about the CVTs. So
right.
that was in my mind.
Right.
I mean,
you know, it's expensive. There's
mm-hmm.
there's just no getting away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And they go bad. You know, they've had their failures. They've had their moments where, you know, for a while there, going back 2 years, they were on back order.
Okay.
They couldn't get enough of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, listen, you know the devil you got.
Yep.
You know, you're not sure what the devil you're going to get, but it's going to have its own set of problems.
That's true.
You know, I think this is a financial decision. I
mm-hmm.
think this is, you know, there's a little bit of philosophy here. Life's too short. Do you want to get something new and play with new technology? Do you like what you have and play with old technology?
Correct.
You know, that's part of it, too.
Right.
You know, the other side is, do you need a vehicle that's got a different fit or purpose at this point in the game?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all the factors to be considered. I'm a little nervous about the dealer, him saying that it needs a wheel bearing that you don't hear.
Okay.
You know, you should hear a dull, you know,
right,
going down the road.
And does it increase with speed?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I do a lot of highway driving, and I try to pay attention, but I'm really not
right
sensing anything.
Right. So I think that you've got to, because otherwise, you know, you're going to walk in, pay them all this money, and then walk out, and the car sounds the same. What?
Correct.
You know, what was the point?
Right.
They can show you bad exhaust. They should be able to show you leaky struts.
Okay.
You know, you've got to grade every repair shop, and I don't care that if it's a dealer. I don't care what they are. You know what?
Right.
Every repair shop has to be graded on bedside manner.
Okay.
All right. And, yeah, I know the whole spiel about insurance prohibits customers from entering the service area. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
guess what? Baloney. It happens every day in America.
Yep.
All right. And that's the trust thing, and that's the relationship thing. And, you know, maybe right now it's not something you can do, but, you know, because of the current coronavirus
Correct.
And all that. But, you know, going forward, you're not in any immediate rush, Joe. I would say
no.
Tomorrow, Sunday, you're going to get the Sunday paper. I would tell you to start looking and seeing what does $25,000 buy you, what's the age, what's the mileage, and then kind of take it from there.
I appreciate that, Ron.
All right, sir. You stay safe.
You too. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, we are back at 855-560-9900 right after this. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, we're back. I want to talk to you about the building blocks of auto repair. You know, how did I get to be the old guy? So Danny, my tech, found, and I think I've made no secret about this, a 78 Z28 Camaro. Purchased it from a customer, 94,000 miles. No, I'm sorry. I've been sitting since 94. It's an 89,000 original mile car. Very original car. Very original car. Now, I remember 78 cars, carburetors, right? Choke pull-offs that go bad, HEIs that, you know, break the rotor tip, and all the things that came flooding back to me, and I was like, oh, good Lord, we're going to go back through this again. Vacuum lines on carburetors and just all the things that make you go, ugh. So Danny's enjoying the tribulations and trials of a bad choke pull-off. Who among you that's old enough to remember carburetors, right? The first thing you did when you got in, you set the choke. You pushed the pedal down to the floor. It set the choke flap. The car would start up. Well, there was a choke pull-off involved. who among you that drove a GM carbureted vehicle back in the 70s and the 80s remembers getting in, setting the choke flap, and the choke pull-off went bad that cold day in October? And you've heard me talk about this story, that this choke pull-off replacement was the simple thing that we always could count on for generating business. You do 50 or 60 of them a week sometimes. They were so bad. Well, Danny's having that experience. And it's good because I can now see the building block. He comes in the one day, we put a new pull-off on it. We had rebuilt the car, put a new pull-off on it. He came in after about driving it for about 3 weeks, and he said, you know, the funniest thing, the car doesn't run when it's cold anymore. He said, all of a sudden, it's stumbling and it's missing. And he said, I think there's something wrong. Maybe the fuel pump's not working. He's coming up with all these ideas. And I said, and I just listened to him, and I said, did you take the air cleaner lid off? No. I said, well, do me a favor. Go outside, take the air cleaner lid off, and let the car sit. When we go home tonight, we'll take a look at it. We took the air cleaner lid off, and he set the choke flap, and I started it for him. I says, the choke pull-off open? He says, no, and the car is missing and stumbling and, you know, all sorts of issues. And I said, dude, take your finger and just take the tip of your pocket screwdriver, take it out, because I make sure he's always got a pocket screwdriver on him. You got to be equipped. And he just opens the flap. Just give it a little bit of air, and the whole car straightens right. I go, He's like, wow. And you could see the light come on, right? He got it, right? All of a sudden, air-fuel mixture, the blending device, the idea of air-fuel ratio, it all made sense. It clicked in his head. You can't see that with fuel injection. Yeah, I got this thing. It's called an injector. I've got this thing called a mass airflow sensor. I've got this mechanical flap called a throttle body. But there's no commonality to it. It doesn't connect. So Danny changed his choke pull off. I showed him how to adjust it. He's now understanding the trials and tribulations of working on Rochester Quadrajets, another name from the past, right? And he's understanding the basics. And I can see his working on the Camaro helping him in the shop in what he does and how he does it. And I thought about it, and I said, that's the problem today. The young kids come into the business, and there's no building blocks. Everything is just, they're thrown in the deep end of the pool with too much technology that they can't grasp the basics to apply it to the hard stuff. So bring back carburetors and choke pull-offs. And if you can find some good ones, send them Danny's way. He's going to need them. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this. Welcome back. We're on the end of the Car Doctor. No more calls. We're going to finish out this hour. So we'll be giving away our PB Blaster goodie bag next week. Tom didn't give me the high sign this week, so that's still on the table for next week. Like I said, from PB Blaster, the folks that make PB Blaster, Blaster Corp, t-shirts in any size you want, as long as it's extra large, and any color you want, as long as you like gray. So real quick, get out to O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go out to O'ReillyAuto.com. I was playing around with this before the show today. I just wanted to point out, because a lot of you had written in, you were asking about emergency kit contents. We've been talking about it off and on the past couple of weeks with the situation being what it is. You know, O'Reilly Auto Parts makes it easy. If you just go out to the search box and just type in emergency kit or roadside emergency kit, oh my gosh, the things they have listed, they've got everything. So just one-stop shop and get out to O'ReillyAuto.com and you'll do very well. I want to answer this email. It's been sitting on my desk here for about 3 weeks. This comes to us from Bill. Hey, Ron, I've been listening to you since your days in New York on WOR. Often you tell callers, that's a long time ago, Bill. Often you tell callers to go out on the highway and use the markers to check their odometer accuracy for mileage. Another way I have never heard you mention, and I think easier, is to just use your GPS, a portable or built into the car, fill the tank, and then use it to measure the mileage. All of them have a setting to tell the number of miles driven after a reset. You know, that's true. I never really thought about that. But in all fairness, Bill, and I'm not saying this is a bad idea, what if somebody doesn't have a GPS? So I always like to point out that mile markers work, the GPS, a portable one or one built into the car work. Heck, for that matter, just the trip odometer would work to measure, you know, mileages for odometer accuracy too. The other thing I like is the mile markers. Is it easier to just, although I guess if you're using a GPS, it would give you mileage on it as well. So yeah, you could use that, and that will tell you how accurate your speedometer is. as well. So just another method of doing it. I appreciate it. He then goes on to say, Ron, I know you said the shop is closed, so you're at home. Well, actually, we're open again now. That's how long this has been sitting here. We closed for about 2.5 weeks. I belong to the New Jersey region, AACA, and have seen many events being canceled, including Rhinebeck. We're watching closely as our annual collectible car show is scheduled for May 3rd at Menin Arena, in Morristown, New Jersey. We'll see what happens. Stay safe and healthy. You too, Bill, and you too as well. I'm Ron Anini, the Car Doctor. Till the next time, mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless.